Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Monday Night Chat Show. My name is Derek Arden, and it's a great pleasure for you to be joining us live on YouTube or on the Negotiators podcast. Today, we have two sessions. The first one, I'm going to share some negotiation stories and some learning points that should be useful to you. And I use the word should because many, many people don't like negotiating. Why don't they like negotiating? Because they don't like being turned down. And those statistics are really quite extraordinary. And I was one of those people at one stage in my career, and I took myself off on a negotiating course. And funnily enough, I got involved in it a few years later. And in the bank I worked for, I was surprised that people wouldn't go on the negotiation course. And for the same reason as my friend Tim Durkin says that doctors won't go on a communications course, bankers wouldn't go on a negotiation course because they knew how to negotiate. They couldn't be seen by their colleagues or their friends going on a negotiation course. So what did we do? We changed the name of the negotiation course to the advanced negotiation course, kept the material the same, and people signed up for it. How pathetic is that? But we know that words are really important when we talk to people, when we influence people, when we communicate with people. So again, pick your words carefully, and maybe stick advanced in front of things and people will be fooled by the psychology. Now, I'm just going to share my screen with you, which is always a little tricky bit on Zoom, and up comes the screen. So Martin, will you just put your thumbs up if you can see the screen okay? That's brilliant. So let's talk about negotiation for a minute. And this is one of my favorite expressions, which I put up there for you. If you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always got. And the reason the slide's a bit off center is I'm not always doing what everybody else does. I just like to change things around, interrupt people's patterns that go on in their brain, and just make people think a bit. Just going to show you this email I got this morning from a bank. Could I assist them in 2021? The numbers have swollen to 100. They'd like 100 on Zoom. But if you zip down a bit, he says, I don't have any budget. The topics we would like you to talk about are negotiation skills, soft skills, and everything else. So I'd just like you to think about how you might deal with an email like that. And I'm going to call the guy. Yes, of course I am. And I listed 20 points that he might put in a business case to his boss or his boss's boss. Martin came up with a few other ideas that I might use as well. So I think this makes a great case study. And by the way, if someone ever says to you they don't have a budget, just attack it in a slightly different way, because there's always ways to find budgets, borrow from other people's budgets, take it out of other accounts, etc. And the one thing I really did think is, how could a big bank not have a personal development budget for its people? You laugh, don't you? And you make things up, and it's an opening negotiating position, but it's probably a bit of an odd one. Going back to the word negotiation, just to remind you that the word ego sits right bang in the middle of the word negotiation. Whoever put ego in the middle of it was doing a great service for us communicators, because clearly if you want to influence someone, playing to their ego in a nice way is a good idea, and making sure they don't play to your ego as a professional negotiator is also a very smart move. Most people fall for it. It's sad, it happens, but that's life. So I want to tell you the first story. When I left Barclays, I negotiated a fantastic package, and I've sold a few people the story. But one of the things I did was that I negotiated, instead of outplacement consultancy, they'd pay for me to go to the Harvard Business School. I haven't told many people this story. I think I was sworn to secrecy because I knew the HR director. And of course, I took him out for a coffee and I put it to him, why don't you pay for the £5,000 for me to go to Harvard rather than to some outplacement consultant who frankly can't write a CV and who's not very good? So I did. And he said, as long as you pay your airfare and you pay the hotel, etc. So I arrived at Cambridge in Boston, where Harvard is, and there were 200 people on the course paying $1,000 a day. And I thought, well, this is good business if you can get it. Maybe I can get some of that. And it was very interesting to be in the same room as Bill Ury, the expert who wrote Getting to Yes, the groundbreaking book that's been written on negotiation. One of the things I took away from Harvard was don't split the difference. And it's very interesting. I mean, I thought about this a lot. And when I got back from Harvard on the Monday, we had a deal with a client, and it was a tax deal where we were moving money around for the client. It wasn't very difficult at our end, but it was hugely valuable for them. And we were going to charge them a £10,000 fee for doing this. And if you, any bank ever tries to charge you a fee, remember what you do. You just go, that's a bit expensive. And you do one of those professional flinches, which I've talked about before. So the client said, oh, Derek, that's a lot. You know, could we split the difference, which would have been £5,000? And I said to Chris, I said, no, I couldn't split the difference, Chris, but I could go 70-30 with you. How was that? Oh, and he said, that'd be fantastic, Derek. Thanks very much. So in a split second from splitting the difference, and I could have done, which was £5,000, I increased the fee to £2,000, and everybody was happy. So that's my first story. Story number two, which is a longer one, is that in about 10 years ago, a friend of mine who used to work for Barclays rang me up and said, Derek, Oxfam needs some help. They haven't got a budget, same old story, but they are a charity. Would you help them? And I just want to tell you how we save them £200,000 a year by thinking outside the box, by doing some negotiating, which you can use, but not getting stuck in. So I'm going to tell you the story. They got to rather glamorous offices in Oxford. I was a bit disgusted when I went there with the offices they had, but you know, I guess a multinational charity in 32 countries would have good offices. And so I got this call from the consultant, would I help? I knew him quite well, he was a good guy. So I went to Oxford, which is about 120-mile round trip from Guildford, and I met the treasurer and some of their team. I asked a few questions, white knuckle questions, I call them, no messing around. They were paying £600,000 in bank charges at that time. I couldn't believe it, £600,000 they had to raise just to pay their bank charges. Clearly, they were being overcharged, in my opinion, by a commercial bank who was doing this for a charity. So I said, show me the numbers, and introduce me to the finance director. Well, two things happened there. First of all, he couldn't show me the numbers very easily. And secondly, he said, no, the finance director is very busy. He can't spare the time to see you. And I said, you want me to help you with the negotiations? Yet I can't see a main board director because he's too busy. I said, I'm pretty busy as well. I've just given up half a day of my time just to come up here. Anyway, guess what? I got the numbers and I got an introduction to the FD. So I, you know, as usual, learning point number one is never take no for an answer. Attack it from a different direction. Think about how you're going to attack the issue or come round from the back when the people aren't looking. So I got the numbers and they were in a spreadsheet and they were all over the place. So I sat in my garden on a sunny Sunday afternoon with the spreadsheet, with my Excel package, and put them into a sensible order. And I remember it took me about 5 hours to do this, which sounds ridiculous, but it wasn't, because their numbers were all over the place. No wonder they couldn't analyze it, which is what happens in quite a lot of cases, actually. And as soon as I looked at them and finished it, I realized it met the 80-20 rule. As you remember, Wilfredo Pareto, the Italian economist in the 19th century, who saw that 80% of the assets in Italy were in the hands of 20% of the people. The famous 80-20 rule, or the famous Pareto's law. Four items were 80% of the cost. So about £400,000 to £450,000 of the costs were just four items. So I said, let's negotiate those four big numbers. So I went and got quotes from HSBC and from Barclays. And what I said to them was, question number one, ask good questions, you get good answers. Would you like the business of Oxfam's money transmission? Oh, yeah, that would be fantastic. In that case, would you be prepared to give us straight away your rock bottom price? No messing about. Oh, yeah, that would be great. Two good questions. So I got Barclays price, and they were 100% cheaper on two of the items that were taken up, were about half the costs. So we then called a meeting with RBS, who were the incumbent bank, and said, you need to sharpen your price. And they said, we're giving Oxfam our best charity price. I said, well, we've got quotes for 100% cheaper on the key items. And at that point, the guy went pale. He didn't believe me. He started folding his arms. All those body language signals that we all spot, don't we, when we're telling people things and wanted to watch their body language. And by the way, they were sitting one side of the desk very defensively in Oxfam, and we were sitting the other. And I let that be. You know, I don't recommend that in any negotiation situation where you want to influence people. But on the other hand, in a rather aggressive sort of situation like this, that's what they did. That's what we did. They were pretty defensive, and they came back 2 days later and came down 10%. Now, the real question here is 600,000, 10%, £60,000, great saving, game on. Most people, most times, would accept that. Well, those of you that know me well know that that is the last thing I would accept. Never accept the first offer. Golden rule number two of negotiating. So the real question is, what do we do now? So you might like just like to think for 10 seconds, 20 seconds, what would you do now in these circumstances? It's great, isn't it, when you hold a silence for 5 seconds, it seems like it's 5 hours. The longest silence I've had is when in an HR negotiation, somebody told me when I was teaching at Henley Management School, now called Henley Business School, they'd sat in a union negotiation where no one spoke for 9 hours. I didn't believe them, but in my book, Power Negotiation, for those of you who've got a copy of that, you see that I've copied something from the North Korean peace talks where they sat looking at each other for 4.5 hours. And if I hold a silence with you for 5 seconds, it can seem like an hour. So this is what I did. I obviously thought outside the box. I slept on it. It's always a great idea to sleep on anything which is probably giving you a problem. I suggested a one-to-one coffee meeting with the RBS charity director, and he was delighted to have a coffee with me. I think he thought he'd come down a few pence and it would be all right. So we met in a coffee shop in London. I went up to London, gave Oxfam my time again. I'd been giving them quite a lot of time at this point, but they were beginning to come round that I knew what I was doing. And I said to him, mirroring and matching his body language, having bought the coffee, quietly, I said to him, we are serious about moving the business. You do know that, don't you? Notice the way I've dropped my voice tonality. And how will you explain this to your directors? You've lost the Oxfam business to Barclays. And this was the time when Sir Fred Goodwin was the chairman of RBS, a notorious guy who was known as Fred the Shred, that scared the pants off anybody in RBS. He's lost his sir because of the way he ran the bank. And he paled up at that stage. And I realized I'd actually got through to him. And he reduced the price 2 days later. RBS lost the credit card business to Barclays. We saved Oxfam £200,000 a year. And that's a year, so that's cumulative. And afterwards, I ran several masterclasses with Martin, who's on the call today, my pal Martin, for them over lunch. And you may have seen that wonderful LinkedIn testimonial I got last week from Bob Greenaway, thanking me for all the help. I thought it was absolutely wonderful. On the last day in Oxfam, having not talked to me for a couple of years, he sent me that LinkedIn testimonial. And I never charge for my time. Anyway, that's not the point. I want to just talk you through the learning points that you could use in your business, or you could use to coach, mentor, help people that you work with, your kids, your grandkids, your great-grandkids, in some people's cases, especially if you're using that Botox cream, Tim. Here's the learning points. Meet the people you are working with face to face. There is no substitute for eyeballing people and sitting in a room with them and shaking their hands, or in today's world, perhaps on Zoom if we have to. Build rapport. Most people don't take the time to connect, build rapport, mirror and match the body language, use all the psychology that we've been talking about on this program. And Jill will talk about a little bit of that later. Make sure you show your authority, your expertise, and your knowledge. So if you're a consultant, make sure they look at your websites, your LinkedIn. If you've written anything, articles, make sure you give those out. I had to convince Oxfam that I knew what I was talking about. Never forget the six P's of preparation. Proper preparation prevents pretty poor performance. The 80-20 rule, focus on the low-hanging fruit, focus on where you can get the results. Read the body language. His body language was amazing when we told him what we had. Have options. Switch the perception of power. People often say to me, Derek, I've got no power in these negotiations. Guys, you've always got power. You just need to think out the box and see how you change the power. I'll change the power in that negotiation tomorrow with that guy that's got no budgets. And one of the tricks, secrets of negotiating, is to have corridor, water cooler, coffee, one-to-one meetings, or these days, Zoom meetings. So they're the eight learning points from that negotiation, which was great fun. And before I move on, I'm just going to ask if there's any questions. Martin, you're muted. You're muted, sir.
The splitting the difference in most people's minds is going 50-50.
Yep.
So if I want to, if I want you to pay me 60 quid and you only want to pay 40 quid, we'd split at 50. Now, the example you gave, excuse me, you went 70-30. Why not 80-20?
That's a great question, Martin. I've got to be honest with you, I've no idea. I just tried 70-30. To see what happens. I kind of thought that 70-30 is a bit closer to splitting the difference again between 50 and 100. And I thought 80-30 might have been a bit aggressive and 60.
As you always say, Derek, you can always ski downhill. So you can start with 80-20, then you can come down to 70-30 and so on.
I know. I don't know. Listen, we don't want to get too worried about debriefing these things or we'll never negotiate with you. I remember my team when I was, I had a team of 30 people in Barclays at one stage, and next minute I had a team of two when everyone got wiped out in the usual Barclays cull. But they used to say to me, Derek, every time we get a good deal, you come back and you say, why didn't we do this and why didn't we do that? You should always brief a negotiation and you should always debrief a negotiation. But that was the issue. Did you have another question, Martin?
I've got another one. When we were doing the stuff for Oxfam, it occurred to me that they are really nice people. That's why they're working for a charity. So, you know, money's not the biggest issue in their lives other than the money they can raise for their cause. And I got the distinct impression that they believed that suppliers with whom they were negotiating were like them, i.e. wouldn't try and stitch them up and would do the best deal for them. And that was a real weakness in their negotiation stance.
Yeah.
What do you think?
It scares the pants off me, Martin, to be honest. I've worked and given my time for nothing to a number of charities, and they don't like negotiating, and they tend to go out and get a couple of quotes, and whatever those quotes are, they tend to take the cheapest one. Even the people that have put the quotes out are expecting to negotiate the price down, and the businesses see it as a business transaction, and the charities think just because they're a charity they're going to get a special price. Well, some people might give them a special price and some people won't. So it was quite scary, actually, that they were being told they were getting the special charity price, the best price available in the UK. And once we got the drains up or dug in the dirt, as one or two people tell me. I love these metaphors. We found that other banks would give a much better price, although you've got to position it and sell it to the bank that you want your absolute best price and get their yes, ask them a yes tag question. Would you give your right arm? Actually, that's what they said. They give a right arm for a relationship with Oxfam, which is what I was offering them. So in that case, I want your absolute rock bottom price where you're just making a few pips on the deal. I don't know. It really was hard work, and I could have given up quite easily trying to get in to see the finance director all the way along. There was an assumption that they were getting a good price because they'd been told they were getting a good price, and that was good enough. Very nice people work for charities. They get paid a lot less than if you were in the commercial world, which is right. They don't like asking for help. And they, as you said, think everybody else is fairly much like them. It's quite scary. I've just sponsored some masks for my favorite charity, Challengers. I said I would pay for the masks, 300 masks instead of Christmas cards like I normally do. And the supplier said, oh, we can get them for just under £1,000. So I said, we'll go back and say I'll pay £900 for them, and they've got the deal. So I just reversed the situation. Now, I know what you're going to say, Martin. Why didn't I say 800 or 700 or 600? Yep, okay. You have to make a judgment, don't you? You have to make a judgment at that point.
Well, you could say, I'll give you £1,000, but I want 1,300.
Yeah, I could have done. I could have. That's why I never liked debriefing them with you, Martin, because you always give me a hard time. And we know there's no right or wrong answer on there. John Lisby puts in the, why did I drop from 10 to 7? Why not from 10 to 9? It's a great question, John. I have no idea. I did it on the spur of the moment. I'd come across this that never split the difference. And I was tempted to split the difference because I could have done it. Would have been fine. And so I was really proud that I went 70-30. It was a relationship customer, actually. You're right. You can always debrief negotiations, and it's great for your people or anybody just to help them with their negotiations, because whilst people think they're good at negotiations, my evidence is that most people are just intuitively good, like kids are. John, Mark Quigley is obviously asking me some difficult questions, about 10 lines in here. I'll talk to you later about that one, Mark, because I know Jill's revving up, probably ready to go on. I'm just going to stop the recording there. Thanks for watching this. I hope the stories were useful for you on YouTube or the podcast, and particularly the learning points. Do email me if you've got any similar stories. My name's Derek Arden, and it's action@derekarden.co.uk. Thanks for watching this on YouTube or listening to it on my podcast channel.